So please, if you, those who like to come down, this is one of the beautiful places on the Vultures Peak. According to the story, this overhanging rock had sand underneath it, and a wild pig, a boar, started digging the sand out underneath to make a little hole for itself. And when they saw that it was open underneath, the monks made a bigger hole, and it became known as the Boar's Cave. This was one of the places where the Buddha would meditate and also receive guests and teach the Dhamma. And the particular story I'm going to tell now is a story of Venerable Sariputta and his enlightenment. It's a teaching of the Dhamma. So for those of you who are coming down, is still more people coming down, Jeff?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll start the teaching of the Sariputta's full enlightenment in the Boar's Cave. Okay, I'll start the teaching now. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Thus have I heard, on one occasion a Blessed One was living at Rajagaha in the Boar's Cave on the mountain Vulture Peak, where we are sitting right now. Then the wanderer, Diganaka, literally means one with long fingernails, went to the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When his courteous and amiable talk was finished, he stood at one side and said to the Blessed One, Master Gotama, my doctrine and my view is this, nothing is acceptable to me. This view of yours, Agiwesana, which was his clan name, this view of yours, nothing is acceptable to me. Is not at least that view acceptable to you? If this view of mine were acceptable to me, Master Gotama, it would too be the same, it too would be the same. The Buddha was pointing out the fallacy of his view, to say that nothing is acceptable, even that is acceptable. It's like a person who says they have no view at all. They don't hold on to views, they say. Even that is a view which they're holding on to. Well, Agiwesana, replied the Buddha, there are plenty in this world who say, it too would be the same, it too would be the same. Yet they do not abandon that view, and they take up still some other view. Those are few in the world who say, it too would be the same, it too would be the same, and who abandon that view, and do not take up some other view. Agiwesana, there are some recluses and Brahmins whose doctrine and view is this, everything is acceptable to me. There are some recluses and Brahmins whose doctrine and view is this, nothing is acceptable to me. And there are some recluses and Brahmins whose doctrine and view is this, something is acceptable to me, something is not acceptable to me. Among these, the view of those recluses and Brahmins who hold the doctrine and view, everything is acceptable to me, is close to lust, close to bondage, close to delighting, close to holding, close to clinging. The view of those recluses and Brahmins who hold the doctrine and view, nothing is acceptable to me, is close to non-lust, close to non-bondage, close to non-delighting, close to non-holding, and close to non-clinging. When this was said, the wanderer Diganaka remarked, "Most Master Gotama praises my view. Master Gotama praises my point of view." Agiwesana, as to those recluses and Brahmins who hold the doctrine and view, something is acceptable, something is not acceptable to me. This view of theirs, as to what is acceptable, is close to lust, bondage, delighting, holding, clinging, while their view of theirs as to what is not delighting, so their view of theirs as to what is not acceptable is close to non-lust, close to non-bondage, close to non-delighting, close to non-holding, close to non-clinging. Now Agiwesana, a wise man or woman among those recluses and Brahmins, who holds the doctrine in view, everything is acceptable to me, considers thus, if I obstinately adhere to my view, everything is acceptable, and declare only this is true, everything else is wrong, then I may clash with the other two doctrines. If I hold the view that something is acceptable to me, then I might clash with the two other doctrines. Or if I hold the view something is acceptable to me, something is not acceptable to me, then I might clash with the other two doctrines. And when there is a clash, there are disputes. When there are disputes, there are quarrels. When there are quarrels, there is vexation. Foreseeing for himself, clashes, disputes, quarrels, and vexation. He abandons those views and does not take up some other view. This is how there comes to be the abandoning of these views. This is how there comes to be the relinquishing of those views. A wise man among those recluses and Brahmins who holds the doctrine and view, nothing is acceptable to me, considers this view. If I obstinately adhere to this view, nothing is acceptable to me, and declare only this is true, everything else is wrong. This is repeating what we have said before. Foreseeing for himself clashes, disputes, quarrels, and vexation, he abandons that view, does not take up any other view. This is how there comes to be the relinquishing of these views, how there comes to be the relinquishing and abandoning of these views. Now, Agiwesana, instead of having those types of views, the Buddha is talking about Dhamma now. This body is made of material form, consisting of the four great elements, procreated by a mother and father, and built up of rice and porridge, is subject to impermanence, to being worn and rubbed away, to dissolution and disintegration. This body should be regarded as impermanent, as suffering, as a disease, as a tumor, as a dart, as a calamity, as an affliction, as alien and disintegrating, as void and not self. When one regards his body thus, one abandons desire for the body, one abandons affection for the body, one abandons subservience to the body. There are, Agiwesana, three kinds of feeling: pleasant feeling, painful feeling, and neither painful nor pleasant feeling. On the occasion when one feels a pleasant feeling, one doesn't feel the other two feelings. On the occasion when one feels, on that occasion, one only feels a pleasant feeling. On the occasion when one feels painful feeling, one only feels that feeling and not the two others. On the occasion when one feels neither painful nor pleasant feeling, on that occasion one feels only that feeling, not the two others. Pleasant feeling, Agiwesana, is impermanent, conditioned, dependently arisen, subject to destruction. Vanishing, fading away and ceasing. Painful feeling, too, is impermanent, conditioned, dependently arisen, subject to destruction, vanishing, fading away and ceasing. Neither painful nor pleasant feeling, too, is impermanent, conditioned, dependently arisen, subject to destruction, vanishing, fading away and ceasing. So having talked about the body, now we're talking about pain and pleasure, seeing that these are all impermanent, conditioned, dependently arisen. They're not arisen because of you, because of your skill or your wisdom. They come about according to nature, natural causes. Pleasure arises, pleasure passes away. It's outside of your control. Pain arises and passes away. It's out of your control, according to conditions. These are all dependently arisen. Pain and pleasure are subject to destruction, vanishing, fading away and ceasing. Seeing thus, a well-taught noble disciple becomes disenchanted with neither painful nor pleasant feeling. Seeing that these things are beyond you, you let them go, allow them to come and go according to their nature. not controlling them, not worrying about them, not being delighted by the pleasure or afraid of the pain. Just things which come and go according to nature, not your business. By being disenchanted, they become dispassionate. Through dispassion, the mind is liberated. When it is liberated, there comes a knowledge. It is liberated. One understands. Birth is destroyed. The holy life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming to any state of being. A bhikkhu whose mind is liberated does like you, Vaisana, sides with no one and disputes with no one. They employ the speech currently used in the world, but without adhering to it. Now on that occasion, the Venerable Sariputta was behind the Blessed One, fanning him. Then he thought, the Blessed One indeed speaks of the abandoning of these things through direct knowledge. The Sublime One indeed speaks of relinquishing these things through direct knowledge. And as the Venerable Sariputta considered thus, through not clinging, his mind was liberated from the outflowings. By understanding that pain, pleasure in between, the body, is not yours, not me, not mine, not a self. He can become disenchanted, and through direct knowledge, abandon these things. But in the wonder of Diganaka, the spotless immaculate vision of the Dhamma arose. All that is subject to arising is subject to cessation, body, feelings, a lot. The wonder of Diganaka saw the Dhamma, attained the Dhamma, understood the Dhamma, fathomed the Dhamma, and crossed beyond doubt, did away with perplexity, gained intrepidity, and became independent of others in the teacher's dispensation, which is a way of saying he became a stream winner. Then he said to the Blessed One, Magnificent Master Gotama, Magnificent Master Gotama, Master Gotama has made the Dhamma clear in many ways, as though he were turning upright what had been overthrown, revealing what was hidden, showing the way to one who was lost, or holding up a lamp in the dark for those with eyesight to see forms. I go to the Master Gotama for refuge, and to the Dhamma, and to the Sangha of monks. From today let Master Gotama remember me as a lay follower who has gone to him for refuge for life. At that time, Diganaka became a stream winner, a soul one, for understanding how to abandon things, how to abandon his views first of all, and then how to abandon the body, relinquishing it, and how to abandon the attachments to pleasure, to pain, or that was in between. Realizing these things are just part of nature, not part of him, to leave them alone, to renounce, unentangle, to become non-attached. Sariputta understood that to its depth, and then became the Arahat Sariputta. And then went on to teach that Dhamma for the rest of his life, becoming called by the Buddha the wisest person next to the Buddha himself. As the Buddha was the king of the Dhamma, he called Sariputta the general of the Dhamma. And that happened in this very cave where we're sitting now, over 2,500 years ago. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.